Please rise for their majesties of Royally Obsessed, the podcast for all things royals.
Stand by! Three cheers for Her Majesty the Queen!
Welcome back to Royally Obsessed. I'm Roberta.
And I'm Rachel.
And it is time for your weekly update on all the royal news you need to know. Just a couple reminders, as always, before we dive in. You can follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. You can also join our Facebook group at Royally Obsessed. You can subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode and leave us a royal rating, pretty please. And send us an email at info@gallerypodcast.com. How was your weekend, Rachel?
It was good. It was very busy. It was also wild. I have some big news to share. I officially bought the sheep sweater that Princess Diana wore.
That's a big purchase too, right?
It was huge, Roberta. I was freaking out. So this was kind of, this led into my weekend, but Rowing Blazers, as everyone probably is aware now, released the warm and wonderful sheep jumper that Diana had. I got a tip from Rachel, one of our wonderful Roros, that like, I feel like just the time difference between where she lives and where I live, she pinged Roberta and I, gave me the heads up that it was going on sale. My whole morning was derailed figuring out how I was going to get this sweater, but I got it.
At and
it
one was point, like, your husband had to try and hack the website.
Yes, I was like, well, it was password protected. And I was like, when does this go on sale? It's going to sell out in 1 second. And I was freaking out. And my husband stepped in to try to figure out if he could like decode the password in advance. We ended up not needing to because as soon as we tried, it was on sale. And I just quickly checked the sizing information and bought it. And it is now sold out, I think. But you can actually pre-order it, but it won't arrive till 2021. But mine should be here within a few days, actually. So I'm pretty excited about it. It's kind of been like my trajectory of the podcast. I've been talking about it since the first episode.
It really was since the first episode, which is kind of wild. But what is the relation to the original sweater? Isn't it the same pattern?
It's the exact same pattern as the one that Diana wore, the one that Sally Muir and Joanna Osborne designed in 1979. They did a collaboration, which, remember, they teased on their blog. They were
That's coming
in fall 2020, but they wrote this in 2019. I've really been sleuthing this out. So I'm pretty excited. I just keep thinking about how I'm going to
wear
it.
So happy for you. And it's your Christmas birthday.
I know, Matt, my husband was like,
yourself.
This is Christmas, because it's like $300. He was like, this is your birthday. This is Christmas. This is through 2021 gifts. He was very like, you just checked all those boxes for me.
And you're like, I'm putting my foot down. I have to have this. Yeah. I wonder if any other Roros snagged the sweater before it went to pre-order and sold out. Let us know. I would love to hear
about your
story.
Oh my gosh, send us photos as it arrives. We can all talk about it. We can have a separate group. We'll talk about
it. I wanted to tell you that I started this weekend watching The Great British Bake Off. I've never watched it.
Oh my
gosh,
Roberta.
So good and so all-consuming. And like,
what a treasure trove of content you just uncovered for yourself.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Dave was like, why are you so obsessed with this? And I was like, it's a study of humanity. Like, it is.
Yeah, everyone's so kind.
It's so good. There's so many like layers to it. And I feel like it's like, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a good escape from today. Like, it just is, it makes me so happy. And now I just want to bake everything.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And you also moved this weekend too. You have a lot going on.
Yes. Temporary move.
Temporary.
Just a 30-day. Yeah. 30-day stay in Philadelphia. Yeah. Yeah. So a change of scenery, which is always nice. We're very lucky.
Really exciting. Well, guys, we have so much coming up. We have Harry and Meghan's joint podcast debut on Teenager Therapy, which I just want to say the royals need to do all the podcasts. I love hearing them on podcasts. We'll talk about that.
Especially our podcast.
Invitation always open. Yes. We also have Prince William's ITV documentary about climate change that just aired, and the big reveal about the Earthshot Prize, which I'm pretty excited, emotional about. I can't wait to talk about that. Kate's assist to reopen the Museum of Natural History, and a special guest appearance from Rebecca Stoker, who you guys know from at The Royal Courier on Instagram, and she's the author of the new book, This is a Book for People Who Love the Royals, The Ultimate Holiday Gift. So we have a lot coming up.
So much, but as always, we have time for a royal refreshment.
And now it's time for the weekly royal cocktail.
This week, we are sipping whatever is in our fridge. I'm having leftover red from dinner. But I did want to tell you, Rachel, I found out this really cool drink that might not surprise people, but it surprised me. And it is that you have a little bit of red wine mixed with like one portion red wine to two portions of mineral water. Oh. And it's like a light red wine spritzer and it tastes amazing. I never really liked mineral water on its own, but with the red wine,
Is mineral water you have to buy at the store, right?
Like Pellegrino. Okay, it's like very, so it's sparkly. Like hoity-toity. Okay. Yeah, it's like very like snobbish. No, not at all. I mean, fancy. I don't buy it for myself, but Dave's parents had mineral water around, so we just had it. And it is so good. And also, it's like not as if you had a couple glasses of red wine dinner and like you feel like you can't do work after or like do a bunch of stuff. Like it's just light and it's wonderful for winter because it's red wine.
I love it. So you nursed one of those while prepping for the pot. I love it. I'm feeling blessed. Exactly. I'm actually just drinking leftover of the Paul Feig gin, the London Dry Gin. It's delicious. I can't get enough. So, and that
it
bottle.
Is. It's really smooth.
So pretty.
I had some more this weekend. So pretty. Well, while we're sipping, we're going to read a lovely reader email from Monica. She wrote about her surprise engagement. Congratulations, Monica. So she said that she was always a longtime listener of the pod. She has followed the royals since Princess Diana died. She says her death greatly affected my mother, who got married and had babies nearly the exact same years as Diana. As I've grown up, I've closely followed the royal family, especially Will, Harry, Beatrice, and Eugenie. So, she says, on my way to a weekend mini vacation this past weekend, I ordered a porcelain cup commemorating Bea's wedding to Edo because, one, it's beautiful. Two, we are the same age with red hair, so I'm partial. She says, her boyfriend asked me what I was doing, and when I explained, he just chuckled and shook his head. I asked him to give me a break and don't make fun of me. He's fully aware of my love for the royals. In reply, he said, I'm not. It's just funny. That's all. But didn't elaborate. A few short hours later, he proposed. He had chuckled that, of course, the royals were somehow involved in our special day. I attached the ring picture and my best B look. I have to say, the ring, we talked about floral engagement ring styles the other week, and hers is that same floral style with the diamonds around. And it's gorgeous.
It totally has Kate Middleton vibes, it. Princess Diana engagement ring vibes. I love it. Well, thank you for writing in. We love hearing from you guys, and congratulations. But okay, moving on. This Week in Royal History.
And now, This Week in Royal History.
Happy birthday, Fergie. That's right. Sarah Ferguson, who we know and love as Fergie, is turning the big 6-1 on October 15th. The Duchess of York was born in 1959 at London Welbeck Hospital, but her royal life really began when she married Prince Andrew on July 23rd, 1986 at Westminster Abbey. So even though the pair had crossed paths their whole life, I thought this was interesting, they didn't connect as adults until the Royal Ascot of 1985. But Diana was actually really pivotal. She was a good friend of Fergie's, obviously, as we know, in recommending that the royal family include her at that event and then encouraged their romance. I thought that was kind of cool. And then I had to mention the fact that they got engaged in February of the year they got married, 1986, and then they were married by July. So these rapid engagements, you know, they happen so fast.
That's even shorter than we're used to. Yeah.
The pair, you know, Fergie and Andrew welcomed two daughters, Beatrice in 1988, then Eugenie in 1990. But in 1992, Fergie and Andrew decided to separate, and the Queen also decided that Fergie would no longer carry out official engagements on behalf of the crown. It's a really big deal. In 1996, their split became official. They were officially divorced. I thought this was interesting, too, that Fergie apparently received a lump sum settlement of about £3 million for her divorce. And it seemed low, but I guess according to interviews, Fergie was way more focused on maintaining her relationship with the Queen. So that to her was the ultimate thing that she wanted to leave with intact. Of course, you know, there were numerous scandals for Fergie that we won't get into. But flash forward to present day when rumors actually are running rampant that Fergie and Andrew are back together. We know that they do live together at the Royal Lodge. And Eugenie, her daughter, has even said, they're the best divorced couple I know. And Fergie told a radio station in 2016, we've never really left each other. I just thought all of that was very interesting as we reminisce about looking ahead to Fergie's birthday this week. But do you think, I don't know, Roberta, do you think that they could get back together?
I feel like no, only because of all, I mean, I think that them living together and maybe the way that their relationship is set up now is kind of perfect for them and is working really well for them. I mean, you don't have to be married to cohabitate with someone and really love them. And I think that that seems to really, that dynamic just works well, especially in light of the Prince Andrew stuff. I just feel
it's a
like
lot of baggage.
It's all really icky and that she wouldn't want to get involved.
Yeah.
And not involved, but kind of. I don't know. It just it wouldn't feel right for him to have a happy celebration right now. As terrible as
it
sounds.
It wouldn't. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like I feel like she'd want to if anything, distance herself in the public eye, at least from him.
Totally, so totally. Yeah, but it is interesting. And I mean, what we do know that is that Fergie really has, she's back in the Queen's good graces. She's also about to have a baller 61st year. I mean, I'm really excited for her.
So much going
it's
on
It's like,
for
talk
them.
About yeah, a celebration. New grandbaby. Yeah, she has the new grandkid coming with Eugenie and the wedding of Beatrice. And also her YouTube channel is just such a delight. So anyways, happy early birthday or happy birthday.
She's publishing tons of books, right? She's
I
always
think so. I feel like children. I think
books?
Her last one was published in the mid, it was like 2012, 2016, I think. So I don't think she has one coming up yet, but she's definitely on a roll with that as well. So she has a lot going on.
Yeah, tons. Yeah. Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, let's kick off this week in news. So we had a couple of Harry and Meghan sightings. The first one was their appearance on the Teenager Therapy podcast that we mentioned earlier in honor of World Mental Health Day, which was this Saturday. Meghan and Harry sat down with the Teenager Therapy hosts, Gael, Kayla, and Thomas in Montecito. I love this. The spokesperson for the Sussexes said that they found out about the podcast from a profile in the New York Times about the five high school students who started it. So just like you and I, just reading the New York Times, and they read that and said, we need to get in touch with them and appear on the podcast. And on the episode, they talked about mental health, vulnerability, self-care. Harry revealed that he does meditation. Meghan said he's really quite good at it, and he's really dedicated to it, which I love that insight. Meghan revealed that her kind of self-care is journaling, and it gives her a lot of perspective. They also brought up breastfeeding and Archie and the South Africa ITV tour interview with Tom Bradby that they did. So here is that segment.
The journalist asked me, well, are you okay? And I didn't realize that my answer would receive such a... an interest from around the world, because I said, well, thanks. People haven't really asked me if I'm okay. I didn't think about that answer. I just answered honestly, because I was in a moment of vulnerability, because I was tired, because there was no presentation. It was just, here's where I am. I'm a mom who is with a 4.5-month-old baby, and we are tired.
I loved that part. I think that was such an off-the-cuff moment, and hearing that moment was, you know, when she did that interview with Tom Bradby, that it really was that off the cuff for her, you know, breastfeeding, kind of that whirlwind aspect of their lives at that moment. And Archie was only 4.5 months. It's just, she wasn't really thinking about it. And it really did become one of her most iconic interviews.
Right. And the fact that she kind of teared up at that moment was so poignant and touched a lot of people. And I think that her explaining, you know, her thinking behind it and what she was kind of going through behind the scenes, that we didn't know, you know, she was running back and forth to breastfeed Archie, and they were under so much stress during that royal tour as he was only 4 months old. I think that just insight provided a lot of context for it. Also, I think the most quoted part of their podcast interview with Teenager Therapy is this line. She says, I'm told that in 2019, I was the most trolled person in the entire world, male or female. Now for 8 months of that, I wasn't even visible. I was on maternity leave or with the baby, but what was able to be just manufactured and churned out is almost unsurvivable. I don't care if you are 15 or 25, if people are saying things about you that aren't true, what that does to your mental and emotional health is damaging.
I mean,
the most trolled person of 2019, I believe it. I mean, I really believe it.
I feel so upset hearing her say that, and how she has learned to kind of just take it on the, you know, just take it and move on. I mean, I think one of the more poignant aspects of the interview, I mean, it's all about mental health and, you know, how to take care of yourself. And I think that the way that they contextualized it with talking about, you know, Meghan Markle enduring that kind of online bullying is one thing, but like when you picture, I mean, it's not okay in any aspect, but you picture like a high school kid or a middle school kid, it's their whole world. I think, you know, the way Harry and Meghan talked about that, it strikes a chord, because it is really important that this needs to stop. I'm so not okay with it. And I like that this is a big cause for them.
And that they recommended, even to these teenagers, you know, don't feel so, you know, beholden to the dings or the notifications or the recommended stuff. Like what would happen if you just went on, saw your friend's post that you wanted to see and got offline? You know what I mean? Like that kind of, I love that they kind of gave them actionable things to better their own mental health and kind of the steps that they took that really helped them.
I feel like I'm taking that advice too. I mean, that was actually, you know, the way that they explained that it is true. A lot of times our lives are like controlled by the ding. And so I've been trying to practice that. I really thought that this was just, there was so much substance to this interview.
Yeah, and I love Teenager Therapy. I think I want to listen to it like regularly, even though I'm nowhere near being a teen. But I thought that they had really honest and very, I don't know, touching insights. And it was such a good podcast, and I would love to hear more from them.
Well, it's a world we're less familiar with being past our teenage years, sadly. So it's nice to kind of tap into that, what they're going through.
Totally. And Archie was mentioned. We have to bring that up. I love that they talked. Harry said he was very good at making bird noises and that Archie loves them. And Megan was like, oh, he's really good.
Sounds
so
about right.
So that was a little insight. Also, we have to talk about Megan's outfit. All the behind the scenes photos that they released are like stunning. They look like they're out of some cool Gen Z magazine.
I know. I love that she pivoted like an Etsy top, you know, an RBG Etsy top that's so affordable. Yes. Also, like, I mean, I restrained myself this one time because I've been shopping a little too much after my sheep sweater, but I really feel like, it's nice, the accessibility for people that want to go out and buy that and be like the Duchess.
Yeah, and it was her whole outfit was kind of RBG inspired, it seemed like, because the top was Etsy, the gray t-shirt, then she had the little striped cardigan sweater over her shoulders, but then she also had the Etsy mask, which said, when there are nine, and that is in reference to the late justice's answer when she was asked when there will be enough women on the Supreme Court. So I really loved that. In support of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Next, we had Harry and Meghan join Malala on Sunday for International Day of the Girl. This weekend was full of big national days, World Mental Health Day, International Day of the Girl. So on Sunday, the Sussexes joined Malala, who is a Pakistani activist and the youngest Nobel Prize laureate. Here is a little of their conversation.
So, you know, what I had realized very early on was that when women have a seat at the table, conversations in terms of policy change, conversations in terms of legislation, certainly in terms of just the dynamics of a community, are all shifted. And typically when a woman is present at the table, she's going to be advocating for an entire family as opposed to a patriarchal presence. And so when you have to see how do you get a woman to embrace her voice, well, you have to start with where she is as a young girl.
So definitely a different tone of voice for them. You know, they're different audiences, I think. And so that kind of changes the way that they sound, both Harry and Meghan. She definitely sounds a little more formal in this and a little more inspiring and more, you know, she talks more about girls' access to education and has this sort of activism bent to that. Whereas the other one was more about vulnerability and mental health and being able to just open up about what you're dealing with. But so it was, both were very, wonderful topics that the Sussexes have talked a lot about. We have to get some lighter stuff out of the way first. And it was that glam Meghan is in full force for this talk. We saw her in a tux turtleneck bodysuit. I've never heard this brand tux, but I thought that was cool that it was a bodysuit. Yeah. She had white pants, a brown belt, sleek bun, dark red lip. So
I
know,
I feel like I'm because obviously early in the quarantine, I replicated Kate's Zoom fashion. I feel like Meghan is like, someone on our team needs to do that.
She kicked it up a notch. Yeah, she really kicked it up. And you're wearing a black turtleneck now, so I feel like you're channeling her.
Yeah.
I also love that Archie got brought back up again. They said they were there. The silver lining of the pandemic is that they were there for a lot of Archie's first. So his first steps, his first run, his first fall. So I thought that was really
sweet,
kind of all what we're going through.
Yeah, because I think that is one of the weirder parts. It's like we would normally be in an office for working parents. It's really challenging because you kind of hear about or you're not there for the exact moment of these first. So I liked that they mentioned that because it is a brighter spot of all of this time.
Definitely. And then we had a double date night. We spotted Harry and Meghan out with Catherine McPhee and David Foster last week. They were at Lucky's Steakhouse, presumably celebrating David and Catherine's announcement that she's pregnant, which there's a lot of gossip and news around that. Just that the way they rolled out the news is a little bit staged. They had a People magazine exclusive. The photos are, if you haven't seen the photos yet of the People magazine exclusive, Catherine McPhee's carrying her chihuahua in a sling on her body, which is
I was kind of confused by this because they're paparazzi pics though, right? Or they were staged,
right? But some, yeah, I don't know if they were just like,
it was like a staged,
they are paparazzi pics, but
or photo op.
Yeah, like multiple angles. I don't know. It's all very bizarre. Interesting. But yeah, they went to dinner to celebrate. Meghan is wearing leather pants and orange backless mules, heeled mules, which I love this kind of greaser or grease look. That was really in a trench. So channeling a little bit of the Grease movie aesthetic. Catherine told Access Hollywood that her 7-year-old Canadian musician and producer husband has a really, really beautiful relationship with Harry, dubbing them like father and son.
So
they have gotten really close. And it is so interesting because Meghan and Catherine actually went to the same high school, Immaculate Heart, and started musicals together. So they kind of have a history, but also this feels like it came out of nowhere a little bit.
I think it's so interesting. Yeah, their friendship. I mean, I feel like because I think Catherine is also like a pretty famous Trump supporter, but we've gotten some tips about that, but I think that it's just an interesting relationship.
That's not that widely reported on though, which is it's very interesting, but she has like if you look up the donations, her donation history, it says that she's given to the Trump campaign, which seems kind of, you know, an exact opposite, I would say, to Meghan's outspoken views.
And values, of, yeah.
Yeah, and values. So
fascinating.
Really interesting.
Fascinating.
That's like fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Politics aside, I guess, which you can't really say anymore. Well, anyways, lots of amazing Harry and Meghan news. But moving on, William kind of was in the spotlight simultaneously this week. I got to say, I have been really emotional about everything that William's been doing. You know, we started off at the last episode, we were talking about the meet and greet they did with David Attenborough, and which led to the new pics of George and Charlotte and Louis. But that also was the perfect segue to William's documentary, A Planet for Us All, which just debuted on ITV. William's been dipping his toe in the water in terms of documentaries. We had The Football and Our Mental Health from earlier this summer. And it's, you know, for anyone that wants to check it out, it's available via Amazon Prime. And I was able to do ITV kind of has a 7-day trial, but you can also subscribe to get ITV content, which I'm actually thinking I'm all in for. But basically the subject of the documentary is William is making his case for leaving his children and all of our children a green, clean, sustainable earth. And I'm not quite sure how anyone can argue with that. You know, it was the perfect kind of precursor to have this documentary come out ahead of the Earthshot Prize, which we're going to talk about next. But I think I was left feeling incredibly proud of Prince William. It's just such a gargantuan effort that he's taking on. And his strategy and his, you know, tactics for solving this are not vague. And I think that that is really, really helpful and productive because I think people are very overwhelmed by the subject of climate change. So I like that.
It's very actionable. Yeah. And also you kind of pointed out he's very king-like in this kind of endeavor, right?
That's exactly the taste. That's how I felt when I was watching it. I just felt like really this is – I mean, William has had numerous platforms. It's not that. But just kind of the synergy of all the touch points of this initiative and this big launch with Earthshot, his documentary, David Attenborough, I really felt like this was like, okay, I'm listening and I really believe that I can see you on the throne. I can – feel your impact already. I did want to mention that some reviews of the documentary are talking about Prince William's unofficial role kind of leading these documentaries and then versus Prince Harry's official role that's coming up via Netflix. How do you feel about that? It's kind of interesting that they're both stepping into the spotlight in that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think because William is obviously a senior working royal, he's not necessarily doing these documentaries for commercial gain, whereas Harry and Meghan obviously have been paid for this Netflix partnership and will probably produce pretty similar feeling documentaries, but just with Netflix. So it'll be interesting to see how they compare and kind of, you know, what impact they both have. I also thought it was super interesting. Someone pointed out that a lot of the senior members of the royal family have taken on climate change. Yeah. And usually you kind of think they stick to their own lanes. Like someone will focus on mental health. Someone will focus on access to education. But Prince Charles, Prince William, and Prince Harry with Travelist, they all are really focusing on climate change now. And so I think that that's a huge deal that three of the biggest, you know, personas in the royal family have chosen this cause. And so I think
it's so critical.
It's the royal family's cause. It's all of our causes now. So
I really like it. I think one of my most favorite moments from the documentary that made me actually laugh out loud was they have a shot, a little moment where William meets a group of kids at All Saints Catholic Primary School in Anfield, and they've created an insect refuge that they call Buckingham Palace. And there's a queen bee that's like this little fuzzy bee. That made me laugh so hard.
So cute. Didn't the girl in that section, the girl is like, can I ask you a question? A little schoolgirl is like, can I ask you a question in their cute little British accent that I can't do justice to? But and he goes, yeah, sure. And she goes, is Princess Charlotte as cheeky as Prince George? And he's like, they're both very cheeky. And I love that she was so excited to hear that answer too.
I love it. And William is so relatable. I mean, it's like, I hate, you know, relatable is kind of a meh word, but I really just feel like he has so many attributes that his mom had, and it's so nice to see him at length in these types of, you know, moments and causes. I also liked Kate's participation. You know, I think that they shot some footage while they were in Pakistan, so it's great to see her at part of the documentary. But that does segue beautifully into the Earthshot Prize, which was really laid out in Prince William's TED Talk, that and kind of all the details of his action plan for saving the planet. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to play a moment from his TED Talk.
I've long been inspired by President John F. Kennedy's 1961 mission to put a man on the moon within a decade. He named it the Moonshot. It seemed crazy. We'd only just launched the first satellite. Putting a man on the moon that quickly seemed impossible. But this simple challenge encompassed so much. He called it a goal to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. In taking that giant leap for mankind, the team behind the Moonshot united millions of people around the world that this crazy ambition wasn't so crazy after all.
So, Roberta, fun fact about me as a Massachusetts native, I've spent a good amount of time at the JFK Library in Boston. And so I think for me to have Prince William draw that parallel between him and that, you know, Moonshot mission really was where I started to tear up, because I think that it just kind of shows, yes, the next 10 years are critical and maybe I just need a little inspiration right now, but it makes it feel a little more possible. You know, we've got to take this on.
It also really reminded me of, this is going to sound so silly, but the moment from The Crown when the royal family is all watching the launch of the rocket to the moon and how excited they are to meet the astronauts, and how Prince Philip is like, everyone quiet. Like, this is the biggest thing. Like, he stayed up all night watching it, all the preparations for it. I feel like the royal family is like really obsessed with that, like that kind of analogy. And they like love the mission to the moon. I think that really resonated for Prince Philip, and that he passed on to Prince Charles, and Prince Charles passed it on to his children.
I love it.
That's what I was reminded of. I was like, they're obsessed with this moon launch.
But it's like that channeling the optimism and hope and like action that we just need. So basically to sum up.
Well, that was one of my favorite episodes of The Crown too. I have to say they did such a good job of that.
I need to rewatch that one. Yeah.
It feels like there's such a tie back to history for them too, because of that, you know, pivotal moment for the royal family.
So. Totally. Well, so Moonshot, Earthshot, the basic gist of behind Prince William's plan is that this Earthshot prize will provide 5 awards a year, totaling $1.3 million each from now to 2030. And it will in that over the span of the decade promote at least 50 solutions to the world's greatest environmental issues, with the total being awarded at $65 million. And then I don't know why this was so exciting to me, but the plan is that starting at the end of 2021, there's going to be prestigious and glamorous events that honor these people coming up with these brilliant ideas. In the words of one aide, the goal is to make these visionaries as famous as the returning astronauts of the Kennedy Moonshot. He also has an advisory board that includes Kate Blanchett, Queen Rania of Jordan, Shakira, Indra Nooyi, Sir David Attenborough, and many more.
And Kate Blanchett, I mean, that is like...
Yeah. Oh my god!
It's such a diverse panel, I feel like.
It's incredible. I really am a huge fan of Indra Nooyi as well. And so I feel like I also
Is she the former CEO of Pepsi?
She is. Right? I actually had the chance to interview her when in my Good Housekeeping days, and she was so inspiring. So I feel like it's kind of cool to see the team he's assembled. But he then described it in his Instagram video announcing them that I'm the very boring coach looking for skillful players. And I don't know why, but I couldn't help but think of like Hugh Grant in Love Actually, like kind of a little bit like really smart, really intelligent, really awesome, but then kind of putting himself down. The humility is there.
Yes, definitely.
But anyways, like I said, I felt like all of this together, I just really felt like I saw William as the future king, and that's exciting. I need excitement in 2020. Give it to me.
Yes. No, totally. I loved the TED Talk. I really like the oak tree analogy, the acorn as a prop. The fact that he's sitting in the actual tree that he's talking about when he's explaining the Earthshot Prize. It was funny because the camera pans out and he's like actually like sitting like on a branch thing that's kind of coming out from the tree. You thought he was just sitting on the ground or something. So I thought that was really hilarious the way that they set it up. But yeah, it does. I feel like when you said that, it rang true that it's kingly of him to take on this massive, massive, you know, issue that affects everyone on planet Earth. And I think it'll be exciting to see the award ceremony, the red carpet.
Give us a red carpet.
Just that in itself, I'm really excited
for. Feel like 2021, we are all putting so much stock in it. We're just like, okay, like I need like a draft of all the royal things alone that I need to, you know, just to look forward to.
I love that they're like, there'll be a huge ceremony in 2021. It's like, well, that feels like a little unpredictable still, but okay, we'll go with that.
They did say at the end. They said at the very end. So hopefully it's funny that they were explicit in that. But yeah, it was very exciting stuff. And you know, speaking of animals, the environment and all of that, Kate also made a quick appearance. We didn't get a chance ahead of recording to see the actual awards ceremony, but that she would be participating in a virtual awards to honor the 56th Wildlife Photographer of the Year. And Kate is back. I mean, I just feel like in real life events for her, she has a gorgeous black pantsuit that's Alexander McQueen. And
her wedding dress designer, by the way.
And she just looks phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
There's a lot of comparisons. I mean, I love the puff sleeve of her jacket, but there's a lot of comparisons to her and Megan with Megan's black pantsuit. Of course, there's always comparisons, but.
Yeah, Megan's also was Alexander McQueen, actually. One of them was. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where, and everyone's saying like imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. I totally.
It's a nice nod to Megan.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, definitely would love to see Kate in more pantsuits. You and I were talking before about how she has donned some pantsuits before, namely that pink one from this year, the like dusty rose colored one. There was a purple skirt and jacket combo. I think it was earlier this year or last year. So she definitely, but I would love to see Kate in more of these like power suits. I love a good power suit. And even in colors, like you don't have to do black. Wear like bright. I love bright colored pantsuits.
Totally.
Hillary.
No, I know. I just think overall, though, just this entire episode talking about everything that the Sussexes are doing and the Cambridges, it just really feels like, you know, Harry and William didn't have to take all these, you know, it's like they could have gone so many different ways. And I just can't help but think how impressive what they're doing really is. And, you know, I just think Diana would be so proud. So
totally. And Meghan and Kate, too. I think that they're all so, so busy. The pandemic is not slowing any of them down.
Not at all.
I know. And especially like, as we said last week, two cases surge over in Europe. I mean, they might have to go back to mostly virtual. And it seems like they are pretty much virtual for the time being. But it'll be interesting if there are any royal tours this year. I would assume not.
Totally.
You know, any major family tours at least. So, all right. Well, now should we intro our guest for the week?
Yeah, we are very excited to chat with Rebecca Stoker. So here's that conversation.
Roros, please join us in giving a warm welcome to Rebecca Stoker, the face behind the popular royal Instagram account at The Royal Courier. She's also the author of the brand new book out this week called This is a Book for People Who Love the Royals, which breaks down all the aspects of everyone's favorite monarchy, from the lines of succession to why the palace guards never, ever smile. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
I'm laughing because as we were setting up, I was literally hearting your pics on The Royal Courier. I love that account. It's such a thrill to have you here and to be holding your book, which is beautiful.
Awesome. Thank you.
Perfect for the holidays as well. I feel like I need to gift it to so many people.
It's so cute. It's so, so cute.
But I wanted to just ask you, because Roberta mentioned it in your intro, why don't the guards at Buckingham Palace ever smile?
Well, it's meant to be, you know, it's a very serious role. And what a lot of people don't know is that the guards at Buckingham Palace are extremely well trained. They are only on that post a certain amount of time. Otherwise, they have been, you know, actually soldiers in the military. They've been to Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, depending on what time period we're talking about. They are extremely well-trained, focused soldiers. And I think a lot of times we think they're just there to be kind of the cool guards in the red uniforms, but these are actually very focused, very trained
the photo
soldiers.
Props. Yeah, they're not just decorative.
Yes, they're not just decorative. Exactly. So their goal is to be focused and protect the queen. They're not there for the photo op, for the smile and that sort of thing.
No, that's totally. I love that background. I feel like I'm picturing my trip to Windsor Castle and definitely taking the photo. And now I have all this new information. Yeah. It's so helpful.
The tourists trying to get the guards to smile. Yes.
Yeah, it won't happen.
It won't happen.
So now tell us, where are you working from right now? Where are you joining us from? How is everything going with this wild pandemic that we're all kind of riding out?
I am currently in Des Moines, Iowa. That is where I'm from. That's where I live. I have been a teacher all the way up until just this year. I started into the business world in September. And so I did get to experience a little bit of the online teaching at the end of the school year, because our schools closed down in March, and it has been pretty chaotic and a real challenge. So to some extent, I really miss teaching, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, right now that's not really where I want to be. So
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
We applaud you.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
So I want to ask, Rebecca, where did your obsession with the royals come from? When did it start? Tell us about the background of your love for the royals.
Unfortunately, where I actually started to find out about the royals was the day that Princess Diana died. I saw that on the news and everything. I was about 9 years old, and I was like, who's this beautiful woman who passed away? This is so tragic. And I wanted to learn more about her. And from there on, it just kept growing and growing. And my mom had a huge passion for the royals. She had watched Charles and Diana get married on TV. She had gotten up super duper early for that. And we had always said we would watch whoever William married, we would wake up early and watch him get married. And so we were up at 4 to watch William and Kate get married. And it's just kind of been an obsession ever since I was a kid. And I think it goes back to every little girl. The princesses are fascinating. The tiaras, all
the
of
tiaras,
that stuff.
Right?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The sparkle, the bling, everything. And so it started back then, and it's continued well into adulthood. I never let that go. So,
aww.
When did you launch your Instagram account?
I launched it about exactly 3 years ago. And okay, well, it was just meant to be something for fun that I was like, you know, maybe there's some other people out there who would enjoy royals like me. Because I don't find a lot of people in Des Moines, Iowa that enjoy royals like I do.
That's what we're here for. We can all connect.
Exactly. I know. Yes. This is great. I know.
This is perfect.
That's why I needed the internet. So I was like, maybe I can find some other people who enjoy royals and we can just kind of share that a little bit. I never thought it would take off the way that it did. It's been crazy, but it's been incredible. I just love connecting with people worldwide who love royals like you guys, who love royals as much as I do. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Was there a specific post where you kind of saw your Instagram account gaining momentum? I mean, to have over 200,000 followers, I mean, well over 200,000, it's incredible. But was there a moment where that kind of just, you started to see real traction?
Yes. Meghan and Harry's wedding. I was seeing it grow by the thousands that day. I was sitting with my mom, you know, watching the wedding, and I was like, Mom, my page is blowing up. This is nuts. And so anytime there's a major royal event, I tend to see more growth, but I would definitely say Harry and Meghan's wedding is where it really took off. I had started it the September before, and my first post was actually on them at the Invictus Games, which was kind of their first public time out as a couple.
Right.
That had actually been my first post. And so then when they got married, that the page just really started taking off.
That was the inflection point. Do you remember before that post how many followers you had versus after?
Oh,
was it like a huge
I would say it was. Spike? I mean, it grew within the day, it probably grew by about 5,000.
That's incredible.
It was nuts. I was just sitting there like, what? And then within the next 48, 72 hours, it grew more. And then just after that, it just started remaining pretty constant that it was increasing. So that was a big one.
And how did that kind of your Instagram account and your online presence as the Royal Courier, how did that pivot into this book?
So was contacted by the publishers and a woman who worked for Running Press, Shannon. And she wrote to me on Instagram and said, you know, we're interested in you writing a royal book. I love your page. I love what you do. And I first thought it was spam. And I was like, who's doing this? Like, and so I, you know, wrote to a friend and talked to my parents. I was like, somebody's asking me to write a book, but I'm like, I don't know if it's legit. And they were like, well, this publishing company is certainly legit, whatever, so look into it. And so we started chatting back and forth and had, you know, phone call and everything. And she, you know, told me kind of in general what they were looking for. And it was something that I had always thought was kind of missing in the royal book market. So I was super excited to do it. And yeah, it was just, it went from there.
Yeah. How would you kind of describe the book to our listeners for people that don't have it in hand yet? You know, what can you expect from the book?
I kind of think of it as a little bit of a royal quick guide, a royal encyclopedia, just way more interesting than an encyclopedia. I don't want to say it's written like that, but you know, it's got everything you could want to know about the royal family, like the titles, the perks, the tiaras, the residences, all these different things that, you know, they're not the easiest thing. People think, oh, I'll just, you know, can Google it and look it up. Well, it's not that easy. So I feel like it's just really compiled all the interesting royal facts that people have asked me over time on Instagram that people really want to know, things that I've always found just talking to people that they've asked me about it. So it's a royal, a quick guide to all things royal.
I definitely feel like it's something I'm going to keep by my side for every recording. It's like the ultimate handbook.
I was just going to say, it's such a good reference book for us.
It's really, really amazing.
You know, keep it in your purse. You never know when you might need it. It's
nice to not have to Google. It's nice to just have it all right here. I love it, especially the section at the back, kind of the quick biographies and quick facts about every royal. It's just really handy.
Yes, absolutely. And I thought, you know, if there's a royal event and they wear a certain tiara or something, you can just grab the book. It's in there. It's got the different tiaras. It's got, you know, that type of thing. It's not something you have to Google and try and figure out. Because after having written it, you know, and researching the facts, I'll tell you, sometimes it's not that easy to find that information. It can take a lot of work. So now it's all clear in one spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. And also the illustrations. Oh my gosh. Who is it? Monique
Amy.
Oh, they're so good. They're gorgeous. So cute. I love all of them so much.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yes. Yeah, the cover was just more than I could have imagined. I saw the cover for the first time and was like, that is like exactly me and everything I could have wanted. I just can't believe how she captured everything. It was great.
Oh, amazing.
Adorable. So back to Instagram, we want to know, what is the royal content that you think makes your fans the happiest? Is it Kate? Is it George? Is it the kids? What do you think performs the best and always, you know, gets the most engagement?
Side-by-side photos a lot of times. If I do side-by-side photos of, you know, one of the kids who, like if Charlotte and William, if I have pictures where Charlotte kind of looks like William when he was young, those types of things, people love to see that.
They love those.
They love
that.
Yeah. Yes. So that
I always see those.
Yes. That gets a lot of engagement. Anytime that I post something, you know, about like palace perks, I have a palace perk series where I post on the tiaras or I post on royal jewelry or something, that gets people really excited. But yeah, I would have to say out of everything, if I post a picture of Kate and do something about her fashion or, you know, something about her adorable clothes and all of that, that'll get a lot of people liking it because, you know, everybody loves Kate. So.
And people just love to see the similarities of children and parents or grandparents.
Yes. And it sparks a lot of debate. It really does. Because I will post it and I'll say, oh, don't they just look so much alike? And I will have people get on and be like, no, they don't. It looks like so and so. I'm like, okay.
Yep. Everyone has an opinion about who Charlotte looks like, or it's always crazy.
It's funny.
Yeah. You know, we talked about Harry and Meghan and sort of their wedding being really an iconic moment, but you actually stopped covering Harry and Meghan. As soon as they made their last official appearance for Commonwealth Day in the UK in March, was that a hard decision to make? What was the response to that? Or has there been any response?
Yeah, it was a hard decision. I told everybody, I said, I'm not going to fully stop coverage because still, I mean, I cover like Zara Tyndall, the Queen's granddaughter, for example. She's, you know, not technically royal as far as a title or anything. Mm-hmm. So I said, they will still appear on my page, but because they specifically, Harry and Meghan, asked for privacy, they wanted to be more private individuals. I said, since it is a page for the royals and they clearly have made the decision that they'd kind of like to step away from that, I just think it's important to respect that. And overall, I got, you know, overwhelming support for that. You know, people saying thank you for respecting what they wanted and all of that. So yeah, it's hard, because, you know, to some extent it's hard to see anybody kind of go in that way and whatever, but I just thought it was important that if that's what they want, we're going to go with it.
Yeah. Do you think that they'll pop up a little bit more as they start to make more and more official appearances, or you think for now they'll kind of be treated like a Zara Tyndall?
Yeah, for now. Yeah. We'll see where it goes. It's
always
been so
flexible.
Hard. Yeah. And with COVID, you don't see them as much as you expected or whatever. So, you know, what I said from the beginning was if there is a major event that they attend or something, I'm totally happy to cover that, you know, and whatever. But I expected there to be more major events.
I know, right? same.
So it's kind of just been like, okay, well, whatever. But yeah, I just, you know, I was like, respect their privacy and just keep the page more focused on the royals in that way. So
absolutely.
And with how much the Cambridges are doing, even in like lockdown and quarantine, yes, and all that, it's a full-time job on its own.
Yes, absolutely, it is. Yes.
Yeah, there's no Rachel and I fully understand where you're going.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot.
Yes, for sure. Just always being at home and recording. I mean, it is still a huge amount of work. So
huge undertaking.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, we want to shift over to this speed round that we kind of told you about, where we want to kind of get your take on a lot of fun royal details. You're definitely an in the know person, so we want your take. So the first question is, who was your favorite royal wedding?
It's a toss-up between William and Kate, because it has so many special memories of being there with my mom and watching that so early in the morning. We had waited for that for years. And we still watch it. We have it on DVD. We still watch it from time to time, which is really funny. I'm like, we're so nerdy, Mom. But
I think
really fun.
A great way to spend the pandemic.
Yeah, I know. But I also absolutely loved Princess Eugenie's wedding. Her dress, her tiara, the kids, seeing George and Charlotte. That I just thought was beautiful. And so it's a little bit of a toss up. I think I loved William and Kate's because I just love William and Kate and I, you know, the memories and everything, but Eugenie's, I think as far as just my style and taste and everything I would have wanted, I think hers was my favorite.
And it was just her anniversary. Yes. This week?
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
Yep.
And that Rachel and I talked on last week on the podcast about that Zac Posen dress that she wore, which was just breathtaking. So I totally agree. Okay, quick follow-up question. What is your favorite royal bauble? And it does not have to be a tiara, but Rachel and I, I know we both love the royal perk section of the book. So which is your favorite?
Okay. As far as tiaras, I love the lotus flower tiara. Originally worn by the Queen Mother, it was originally a necklace that her husband had given her for a wedding gift. And she ended up making
it
into a tiara.
I'm pulling out my book to look up. Yes. Let me quickly reference
my... Unfortunately, I can't tell you. Page 24. No.
Page 93.
No. But it's in there. The lotus flower tiara. I love that one. It was worn by Princess Margaret for many years. And then Kate has actually worn it. There's something, I love it. It's just got such a 1920s flair to it. And as we know, my page is, it's about royals, but it's also about fashion. And so I love the different decades. And I just love how that one so reflects the 1920s. I also love, as far as baubles, the Queen Mother's sapphire fringe earrings, diamond and fringe earrings. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's, can't remember in my head if there's a picture of it in the book or not, but they're
there
just
is.
These gorgeous sapphire
so
earrings.
Beautiful.
And Kate has worn them on occasion and they are stunning. And I am just such a sucker for earrings. I buy way too many earrings and those ones are just stunning. And I'm so happy that she wears
so
them.
Beautiful.
Love those choices so much.
Beautiful.
Okay, so our next question,
yes,
which royal is the best at Zoom?
That's good. good. I think Prince Louis did pretty good the other day. He had to ask a question
so cute.
Yeah, he had to ask a question to Attenborough.
David Attenborough. Yeah.
Yes.
What is your favorite animal?
And I was like, you are the best on Zoom, kid. You are so cute. I mean, it wasn't live, but it was adorable. Yeah, I think Prince Louis.
I know, it must have been a single take, yeah.
I know, so cute. And then Charlotte asking if he likes spiders. Oh, it was so adorable.
Yes, I loved that.
Okay, so now we have to highlight the section in the back. There is an appendix of sorts highlighting all the key figures of the monarchy and their quick stats. And with each one, you give a right royal fact, which I love that name. Very, very sweet. So what do you think is the best right royal fact you learned that didn't make the book?
Oh, that's hard because I'm like, a lot of them made the book. Here's something interesting that didn't make the book, now that I'm thinking about it, that I've read about before, but it just didn't have a spot in the book. And you guys have probably read or heard about it, maybe. But her dollhouse growing up, that she basically had a miniature house for herself and her sister. And it was a tiny house, and it had tiny furniture and everything else. And her and Margaret used to play in it growing up. And they have pictures of it. It's absolutely adorable. And I wish I would have gotten the chance in the book to talk about it. I could have put it under the royal residences section.
Yeah, right.
Your little childhood home.
Yeah, Royal Yacht Britannia.
Yes. Oh, the Royal Yacht. Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, from your Instagram account, we did a little lurking. You have a British-inspired washroom. True or false?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes, I do. I love it. And it was years in the making. But I was going to say,
how do we pull it off ourselves?
Exactly. Yeah. I did that once. I put on my stories all the different places you could find the different stuff that I had in there. So it's my London themed bathroom is what I call it, but it's got royals, it's got London. I lived in the UK for a year. That's where I got my master's. And so I was just, I'm not only obsessed with the royals, I was obsessed with them before I went to the UK, but now, after living in the UK, it holds such a special spot in my heart. And so I wanted to really decorate like that. And it's got royal pictures. I have a Union Jack rug and a Union Jack Kleenex holder. And everything is basically, you know, different pops of red. And I love it. The shower curtain is a map of the underground. So
I love it.
No detail has been left undone. It is pretty awesome, if I do say so myself. I love it.
That's amazing. As someone that has a portrait of Princess Diana in her bathroom, I totally support your idea. It like makes me like kind of energized for the day. I'm like, okay, let's do this.
Let's do this.
I feel inspired.
Yes.
It is definitely conversation starter. Anyone who comes into your home or like guests or anything are like, okay, what's the deal here?
Well, everyone uses the bathroom, right? It's like a good place to have it.
Yes. So yeah, it does start a good conversation. Yeah. And people are sometimes it starts the conversation like, why are you so obsessed with the royals? It's like, why are you not? I don't know.
Yeah, for good or better or worse, it starts the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's hard being an American because people are like, you're an American. Didn't we like fight to get away from Britain? I'm like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, that was 1776. Come on, man. It's funny, the arguments that people make. Some of the things that they say,
So we're assuming that you've watched The Crown. Are you a Crown watcher?
You are assuming correctly.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. So 3 seasons so far, what has been your favorite storyline in The Crown?
I loved the early years, early on, just seeing how she and Philip got along in the beginning, and then seeing that transition for him of having to suddenly go from being, you know, kind of the husband, the head of the family, to suddenly now he is underneath his wife, who is the monarch. I thought that was absolutely fascinating to see. That was one of my favorite plot points, because I think that's so hard. And I think it's been amazing what he's accomplished and how he's been able to do that, because I think, it, you know, the time, it was much more, you know, the alpha male kind of dominant type of thing. And so to see mm-hmm. him be able to grow into this role of serving his wife as the monarch and whatever, it's truly been incredible. And he's done an absolutely amazing job. So that's been a really cool plot point.
Yeah, especially because I felt like that was such a peek behind the royal curtain that we didn't yes. hear about so much. So it was just so like so eye-opening to see, like, you kind of would have assumed that that interaction had taken place with between them. But to see it on screen and to see it all, you know, laid out for you, yes. It was so interesting. And so I just, yeah. Totally
yeah,
loves
yeah. the drama of
the
that.
First
yeah.
season was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm excited for season 4.
Oh, me too. To see Diana and everything and the wedding, that's going to be so awesome.
Well, okay. So final question. We ask all of our guests this. Which royal, living or dead, do you identify with the most and why?
I think Zara a lot.
Interesting.
I think Zara Tyndall. Yeah, because she seems to really value her family a lot. She, I just admire how she gets along with everybody in the family. It doesn't matter who it is. Everybody seems to love Zara, is mm-hmm. close to Zara. She's just somebody I really would like to emulate and be like. She doesn't seem to, you know, have any problems with anybody. She's just always happy. She is, you know, she just seems like she would just be a ton of fun to hang out totally. With. And she's accomplished so much. She got a silver medal in the Olympics. And yeah. I don't know. I hope I identify with her, but more than anything, I'd like to be like her. So
I guess we all aspire to be like Zara.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's kind of a mixed question there, but yeah, Zara.
Totally. I feel like that's a great answer. I love that answer. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's such a treat to talk to you. And we really hope that everyone, this is a book for people who love the royals, available this week. So you need to get it. It's the best holiday gift. And follow Rebecca at The Royal Courier on Instagram.
Thank you guys, Rebecca, so much for having me. I just so appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
And now, before we adjourn the Royal Pod, here are highs and lows.
It's time for the Royal Highs and Lows.
My low this week is Harry is headed back to the UK for, quote, a tough talk with the Queen. So multiple reports are saying that Prince Harry will soon return to the UK in the coming weeks to have a conversation with the Queen, and some are wondering whether it's about his visa status, which gets a little complicated, and there's all these like diplomatic terms and things for it. But either that or perhaps their political, calls to action that they've a lot of people have been, or at least a lot of people on Twitter have kind of been talking about, been bringing up. And there was, I think, a representative that wrote like a letter about Harry and Meghan and how they shouldn't have titles and all of this and whatever. So this all comes because I think the main report was that the staff were told to prepare Frogmore Cottage for his arrival. But a royal biographer, Penny Jr., told The Mirror, Harry and Meghan have burnt some significant bridges that may be beyond repair. Right now, it doesn't seem to bother them. And I can't see Meghan ever wanting a way back. I don't think I can see them wanting a way back, but not because of bridges burned, but just because they have so much freedom now with, you know, and monetarily and otherwise. So I think that, you know, I definitely think their one-year review won't be a question of whether they would return or not. It seems they're very happy with their current life, but it'll be interesting to see how Harry's visit goes.
What is that conversation going to be? Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, my low is kind of a quirky low. apparently, Princess Beatrice sliced Ed Sheeran's face with a sword at a party at the Royal Lodge circa 2016. I had to like include all those details. Very
so
weird.
Random. Right? Yeah.
I was like, huh, when I read this. But stitches were required for Ed, and apparently Beatrice never followed up with Sheeran, according to his manager, Stuart Camp. And Stuart is pretty pissed about it. He shared that on the Straight Up podcast and said that I guess there was like a whole different story that was concocted and it never was meant to be revealed that it was Princess Beatrice, but it was, and she was maybe drunk, waving the sword around, trying to knight another partygoer. I don't really know. I think it's a low. It's weird. Everyone lied about it. It's a quirky low. I'm calling it a quirky low.
It's also like the most unrelatable. Like, who else besides the royals have swords that they wave around at parties? Like, this is like, you know,
it does sound incredibly unsafe too.
Yeah.
Drinking and sword holding. No.
My high this week is there is a new Crown teaser. Netflix released a chilling new trailer for The Crown season 4. It is out November 15th, which when our episode airs will be 1 month away, and I'm so excited. The narrator is, it's very kind of eerie, the trailer. It gives me, you know, it's gives me pause because it's super dark. And the narrator kind of sounds like an archbishop officiating a wedding. Perhaps it's the one from Charles and Diana's wedding day in the show. But he says, "Here's the stuff of which fairy tales are made. A prince and princess on their wedding day. But fairy tales usually end at this point with the simple phrase, they lived happily ever after." And then he says, "Our faith sees the wedding day not as the place of arrival, but the place where the adventure really begins." And it's all dark and spooky, and everyone's out to get Diana, and it's really scary, and I'm really excited. And I also think Gillian Anderson is going to win an award as Margaret Thatcher.
Because I can't take my eyes off her in that trailer.
Just totally the costume, agree. Makeup, hair, everything. It's like she's so good. I'm so excited.
More entertainment for me. My high of the week is that Spencer, the drama by Pablo Larraín, is still on and filming. We found out this week is set to begin in January 2021. Kristen Stewart is, as we know, set to step into the role, and she's been talking in an interview saying that it's intimidating as hell to mimic Diana's accent because people know and are so familiar with it. She's also really been doing her homework, reading biographies, and says that it really is one of the saddest stories ever, which I think we all can agree with different aspects that it really is, but also that she's never been more excited to play a part. And I still have I can't visualize her in the role yet, but I'm really excited for it. 2021, that's the theme of this episode.
I think until I see her with the blonde wig, it'll be very hard for me to picture her as Princess Diana. And I hope that it all, Emma Corrin is like a replica of Princess Diana. And I think that's a very high bar to set. So it'll be very interesting to see how this movie turns out. I'm excited for it though. I like Kristen Stewart. So.
Yes, such a high.
All right. Well, just a reminder before we close, leave us a royal rating on Apple Podcasts. Here's a real review from GBunny720. "Such a brilliant show, which had fulfilled my UK royal family fantasy," with lots of little royal emojis. Love it.
Meghan Markle, we need more emojis that are royal. Just throwing it out.
I know. Yeah. Can we start a petition for, I think it's called the Unicode Consortium. It's weird that I know that.
Love that you know that.
The Emoji Unicorn Consortium. We'll start a petition. All right. Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and the Facebook group. You can drop us an email at info@gallerypodcast.com. You can follow us personally on Instagram. I'm at Robbie Frito.
And I'm at RKBNYC.
Until next week.
God save the pod.
Her Majesties of Royally Obsessed have retired for this episode. God save the pod. And if you fancy the podcast, give Royally Obsessed the royal rating of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group, Royally Obsessed. Royally Obsessed is a Gallery Podcast production.